and welcome to episode 38 of the Back to Front show. As always, joined by Kieran Musterton, live from Wales. How are you, Kieran?
Hello. Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm actually feeling quite a lot better, actually. I've been
good.
Hit by...
A little under the weather.
Yes, under the weather. Under the weather. Suffering from some kind of virus, apparently. One of those ones where you go to the doctors, they examine your throat.
Say it's viral.
Check your glands and say, it's either January or a virus.
Nice. I'm going to do my best this week not to donk any mics.
Oh, I know, yes. So, Mr. Spooner, if you're listening there on your frequent journeys on the M4 motorway, we apologise for any donking.
Yes, I'm a regular donker.
You are? It's been said before.
I think it's just the nature of my microphone and the table that I sit at for these recordings. And I think I need to, you know, Keir has been pestering me to be more professional in my approach.
I have also volunteered to fund said professionality.
There's no need to fund said professionality. I just, I'm just, you know, well, it works. You know,
it works.
I'm just married,
it doesn't.
To the, married to the Yeti, and I'm married to, you know, sitting on my kitchen table.
Well, there's no inherent problem with any of that. It's just that I think if you had, you know, the pop shield and the table clamp thing, it would you know, increase your sort of audio
fidelity.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right. Okay. Perhaps that's something for the future.
Well, you never know. You never know. But yes. So we were going to talk. Well, this was going to be the first episode in our #12 ideas series.
But you've changed your mind.
Yeah, with your blessing, I hasten to add.
Yes.
So, with the sort of, well, with you said, as long as it's not too down, as long as we're not too downbeat about this topic.
We don't want to be, you know, to be miserable, do
we? No, well, we're not miserable people. Any regular listener out there will tell the, you know, anyone how upbeat we are. We've always got a good word to say about everything, haven't we?
Yeah, everything.
But we were chatting this morning, and you know, the sort of topic about remote working kind of came back up. We both remote work for organisations who are based a considerable distance from our own postcodes.
Some more than others.
Some more than others. And whilst on the one hand, I think remote working is amazing, not without its difficulties. And I thought it would be interesting to discuss some of those, just because
chew
the fat on that. We've both, just for the record, also worked in sort of large organisations where we've been based in the office as well. I've
corporates,
yes, blue collar, button down Fridays, and all that kind of thing.
Well, not blue collar as in the Americans.
Well, no, blue collar shirts,
and white collar,
white collar.
But yeah,
but I always used to wear blue shirts. No,
not that all Americans are blue collar. What I'm saying is,
well, are you digging a hole?
Could be digging a hole.
You're digging a hole, Kieran.
What I was meaning is, as in Americans use the terminology white collar and blue collar.
Indeed, yeah. So I was merely referring to the colour of my shirts, but anyways.
Right.
But yeah, and also we've shared offices and we've kind of worked out of coffee shops. So we thought it would be interesting, not that we necessarily offer any up solutions to the maybe the isolation you might be feeling, but we can try. We can try. But we will be back with 12 ideas probably next week.
Yeah.
And we'll, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think we've got many a good idea that's never seen the light of day, and probably for many good reasons. So we'll share those with you over the course of the year, starting next week. But in other topical news, we are now up to 10 reviews on iTunes.
No.
Yes.
10.
All 5-star.
Double digits.
It's cost me a lot, but we've got to 10.
Fiverr.com, yeah?
Yeah. Anyways. hey, that's a thought, isn't it?
What, just game the system?
We could outsource our reviews.
Yeah.
No, we'd never do that. We'd never condone it. But yeah,
not a million years.
We're up to 10, so I guess the next big milestone will be 11. So if you're out there and...
Number 11, please come in.
Yeah, if you like what you hear and care to share your praise on iTunes, we'd greatly appreciate it. As always, if you have any criticisms of the show, please direct them to Kieran directly on Twitter.
Yeah.
But, in other news, it's you'd think there's you know, a lot happened in the last week.
There is. It's exciting.
Our friend, His Royal Highness Craig in Wales. The Craig in Wales.
Okay.
Got in touch after the last show.
Right.
Partly to call me a rather rude name.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Because
was this Lego Man Gate?
Yes, Lego Man Gate. Ooh. Lego Head Gate, I should say.
Lego Head. I apologise profusely for referring to Lego Men.
Well, you see, when we were...
In any disparaging manner whatsoever.
Yeah, when we were going through some of the generally, you know, worldly, you know, worldwide sort of recognised cliches of startup land, it seems that Craig, His Royal Highness Craig Wells, got his checklist out and ticked them all off.
Yes.
Although, in his defence, he has taken it to another level. He has an Arduino-equipped budgerigar that can issue random tweets from its own account.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not not even going to...
You're not making this up. You're not even making this up.
You couldn't.
No.
It would be nigh and impossible. So maybe we'll put the budgerigar's Twitter handle in there. And yeah, maybe you can tweet the budgerigar. Oh, do you remember a thing? I actually got bought one under the guise it was for my newly born daughter. Mm. A NAS tag, a NABAS tag? It was kind of a rabbit that was a Wi-Fi equipped rabbit that you could...
No, that sounds dodgy.
Yeah, no, I'll put it in the show notes, where each had their own sort of unique ID and you connected through the internet.
Interweb.
And you could make it play tunes or you could send messages to any other NABAS tag and it would kind of read them out.
Right. That's creepy.
No,
never heard of this. No.
Well, I think Craig's...
Is it intended for children?
I think it may have been, but I doubt if anyone under the age of about 25 bought one, principally because it was... so occasionally I'd sort of... My NABAS tag would wake up...
How big's this thing?
I don't know. A few inches high, maybe? A foot?
Right. A foot?
Yeah, foot tall. It's kind of like...
A rabbit?
Yeah, it was a Japanese sort of style rabbit. Oh. You think I'm talking rubbish. I've got to Google it now. Excuse the keys. NABAS tag.
Let's hope this is real.
Yeah, absolutely real. It's got a Wikipedia entry and everything. NABAZTAG. It's a Wi-Fi enabled ambient electronic device in the shape of a rabbit.
An ambient electronic device in the shape of a rabbit.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's had the 100 Rabbit Opera at the 2006 Next Fest in New York. There was an API, including all popular languages such as Java, Perl, and PHP. And it supports services in German, Italian, Spanish, and Dutch, as well as English and French.
Yeah, I was really feeling my age the other day. I made a joke about CPAN mirrors, and your friend of mine, John Matthews, didn't have a clue what I was talking about.
He probably wasn't born.
No.
But anyways, yes.
Moving on.
After he, lambasted our cliches whilst admitting that he fulfills every single one of them. He
not
did, yes, His Royal Highness. He did offer to give our listeners some free books.
Nice.
He's recently relaunched Five Simple Steps.
Yep.
Which he and Amy resurrected last year.
Cool.
And they've relaunched their new Shopify site. And did I?
Fantastic.
Did I mention that? No. Which is actually, I don't know if you had a chance to look at it, it's really nice.
I haven't actually, I'll check it out now.
It's very, very nice.
Excuse the keys.
But they've got some new pocket guides out. These are the little books around, each one's about, I don't know, 8,000 words or something.
Oh, nice.
Like a long essay. There's four in this particular collection. Colour Accessibility from Jerry Cody. The Craft of Words Part 2, microcopy. I think that's the Standard Easters, CSS Animations by Val Head, and Version Control with Git. I mean, Git's such a bad name, isn't it? Don't you think?
It is, yeah.
Maybe it doesn't translate across the world, but...
I quite fancy that CSS Animations book, actually.
You do?
Yeah, I quite fancy it.
Really?
I did a little... one of the things I did with the third years at the university when I was working there, I did some CSS Animation and got quite into it, quite liked it. And they like it as well, obviously, because they're media students, so they're doing animation and all sorts of things. And so they, you know, like to see animation on the web. So I quite like that book.
What did you animate?
A little spaceship going along, like sort of Space Invaders type of thing.
You did that?
Well,
Mister,
it was the example I used.
Mister, I can't stand front end.
Oh, yeah, getting more into the front end, aren't I? I've been doing lots more of it.
You'll be a Fed before you know it, mate.
Fed.
You can put that on your CV.
Yeah.
But, they've printed off these. There is a limited run, but Craig has kindly siphoned off a couple of volumes of each for us to give away. And I said, well, you know, because we're renowned for doing great competitions on this show.
The giveaways always work for, us.
Brilliantly well. So I said, well, how do you want to do it? And he said, oh, it's up to you. So in turn, I did what any producer would do and delegated it to you.
Yeah. And I've come up with a cracker.
You have come up with a cracker, not a hacker. A hacker, not a cracker. Two questions. Now, well, actually, why don't you explain how this is going to work? Because it's not the simplest of things. But you seem to have got a system going. So why don't you explain?
The system, yeah. So there's a question for each bundle of books. It's that simple. So
you say that.
I'll ask the question, which are themed around cult classic tech movies from the 1990s.
Bridging that gap there between tech and film, as always.
There you go. So what will happen is you answer the questions on Twitter at Back to Front Show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The first person to answer each of those correctly, not together, but the first two people to answer the questions will win the two bundles. Does that make sense?
So if I answered both because I'm up on my cult classics...
Because you're up on your cult classic tech films in the 1990s.
Yes.
Actually, they're both from 1995.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
It was a big year for tech films.
Was it? 95? Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you answer both just because you're that way inclined, you will not win both
bundles. You will not. You will win one bundle, yep. And then the next person to get one of the questions right will win the other bundle.
Now, of course, if by answering both questions you inadvertently give our other listener the answer, so be it.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. But if you want to show your prowess,
yes,
then how quickly you can Google the answers to these questions.
Yes.
You know, then so be it.
So we should say at Back to Front Show, maybe give it a hashtag of FSS. Just so we know, because we get a lot of tweets, it'll be hard to differentiate.
FSS. We need to be careful with that. FSS.
Five simple steps.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Or at, you know, hash Lego head or whatever you want, just so we know.
Just so we know that you're answering the question.
Yeah, I think the most... yeah, we had a few for the last one, almost double figures. It was good. So if you want to get your hands on these books and you are a winner, what I'll do is work that out and then I'll drop you a note and get your mailing address, because these are real books printed on real dead trees. And His Royal Highness Craig in Wales will send them along to you.
He will.
That's very kind. Thank you so much, Craig. And please do check out Five Simple Steps, the new Indeed. Five Simple Steps, I should say. And yeah, plenty more goodness coming throughout the year, I have been told.
So shall I ask these questions?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to host a pub quiz.
Have you really. Never hosted one?
No.
Huh.
No. Anyway, so the first question.
Yes.
What was Matthew Lillard's handle in the cult classic 1995 film Hackers?
Hmm.
Okay, I'll say it again. What was Matthew Lillard's handle in the cult classic 1995 film Hackers?
Can I start the clock? Oh, no, sorry. No. It's not that kind of... Okay, sorry. No. It's not Countdown. All right.
What is it? Whittier Goldsmiths. question two for the second bundle. They're both the same bundle, right? There's no difference in the books.
I can't guarantee that the books will be placed in the same order in each bundle. So technically, but yeah. Yes.
Technically, but they're the same books.
Same books.
Yeah. Okay. So the second question.
Yes.
In the same year, Sandra Bullock... Mm-hmm. played a systems analyst in the film The Net.
Oh, great film.
During the course of that film, her identity is changed by cyber criminals.
Wow.
What was the name they gave her?
Mm, okay. Can you repeat the question?
Yes, of course. In the same year, mm-hmm. 1995, Sandra Bullock played a systems analyst in the film The Net.
Okay.
During the course of the film, her identity is changed by cyber criminals. What was the name they gave her?
Okay. Hackers, there's some acting talent in that film, wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Big hitter.
Wasn't that, was it Jolie? Was Angelina Jolie in that one?
Angelina Jolie, yep.
Johnny, what's his name? Who she married?
Johnny, what's his face?
Yeah, the British guy.
Yep.
Yeah, great films. What makes a cult classic then? I mean, is that, you know...
I think... It sort of covers a multitude of sins, doesn't it? It's the sort of thing that everyone's seen and is sort of it's sort of rewatched and there's like nostalgia attached to it. But it also, I think it sort of covers up for films that are actually quite bad.
Yeah, I was just about to say.
Nostalgia attached to them.
Once we watched
so, but saying that, you know, people say that Reservoir Dogs is a cult classic.
Mm.
So that's not a bad film. I think it's sometimes a synonym for bad film that we all like and feel nostalgic about.
Do you know, I've never seen all of Reservoir Dogs.
What?
No. He's one of those ones that at university, everyone...
I take it
had
you know
on,
what happens.
Yeah, there's some kind of situation.
Well, let's
with
not
an
give
ear.
It away.
Situation yeah, with an ear.
Well, no, not the ear.
Huh.
The ear got all the attention, but you know that, the twist.
No, I don't even know
I'm
that.
I'm just kidding.
I have no idea.
Anyway.
Anyways, but anyway, so on with the show. On with the show.
Yes.
And, oh dear, I just noticed I spiked there. I hope Mr. Spooner wasn't driving on the M4 at that point.
I'm spiking constantly because I keep touching the mic by accident.
He's not going to like it.
He's not. He's probably got a really good sound system. This is why.
He has.
You know, everyone else is listening on little teeny little Apple headphones.
Yeah.
But he's probably got a Bose or something sound system that means that every time I touch the mic, it sort of sounds like his back axle's falling off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, over the roar of his V8. So you probably need a good sound system. But let's be serious for at least 10 minutes.
If we can.
So the joy I put here, the joys and perils of remote working. And this was really sparked by, I guess, I don't know, kind of like the end of last year was busy. It felt like a really busy year, really good year. Lots of good stuff happened despite our protestations on our annual review. But I think, you know, as we both said on that show, it was work-wise, personally, it was a really good year. But there's this expectation, isn't there, that come January, you're going to kick it into gear. You've got a huge long list, whether you've actually made it in your notebook or, you know, in some list-taking app of the week or whatever it is.
Your choice, yeah.
And I don't know, this year, normally I've been really, really positive. And I'm feeling positive, apart from this virus that is hopefully going away now. But and I don't know, this year's feeling a bit harder to get into it. And the more people I talk to, the more people I think... it's a bit of a common feeling and maybe always has been, you know, the January blues and all that kind of thing. And a lot of people say they don't like January. And I just wondered, I mean, you know, we got talking, we both, as we said at the top of the show, work remotely. And for the most part, I it's a real privilege. I'll hasten to add that, I being able to work remote is great. And, for the most part, it's really a positive thing. You know, you can structure your own time.
We should hesitate. That's because of we can both do that.
Yeah,
because of our employers. Some people who work remote, and I do know people who work remote or have worked remote who didn't continue to do so because they couldn't structure their own time, and because I think it's sort of how much the company that's doing the remote, you know, allowing you to work remote, buy into it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm also have a time zone difference, so that kind of. There's a good overlap, thankfully, because they're the more East Coast than West. But so often when, I'll wake up to a lot of emails and stuff like that, which I can clear in the morning and then, catch up on calls in the afternoon, things like that. Or, you know, have a good sort of 2 or 3 hours where I can get my head down before sort of activity starts happening. But I do think a lot of people, and do you think we should distinguish between working remotely for a company and, say, freelancing, where obviously you might well be working out of your back bedroom or, you know, co-working space? I think they are slightly different because...
I think they're definitely different things, but I don't... I think there's obviously a lot of crossover in terms of the things that those two types of people experience.
Mm.
That being said, I think that, you know, obviously if you're freelance, the freedom is far greater.
Yes.
You know, you and I have talked about things like conferences and meetups and that kind of thing before. I think once you, unless of course it's your job, like in your case, but, you know, I think once you pass over, as it were, from being a freelancer to a remote worker, I think that there is definitely an onus there that, you know, you can make your own time, you know, to a certain extent, but I think there are limits in terms of you know, I think that most remote workers would find it hard to justify, you know, going off to as many conferences as some freelancers
for example. There is a sense maybe that I guess a distinction is that once you are working for someone when you're freelancing, you know, it's a set deliverable. Whereas when you're working with a company, it's a long-term arrangement, obviously, and the projects kind of carry on and new things happen. It's not as clear cut that, and obviously I think also clients view relationships with people who are doing them pieces of work very differently than employers see employees effectively. So,
yes.
But yeah, one of the common things is a lot of people say they feel isolated. And, that's why we have a lot of this technology around us, such as, you know, we use Skype or there's, we've talked about Slack. We've talked about, I think there's one now, is it called Squiggle or something like that, that basically you can all log into and it kind of takes photos of you so you can see what people are doing. So you've got that kind of interaction. And whilst on the one hand we might chuckle, you know, on the other hand, how important are these tools for making us feel a bit more connected? I mean, what do you think?
I think that I originally thought that these tools are very important in terms of making us feel connected, and that, you know, it was great that you could effectively be in your home and still be able to, you know, have relationships with your coworkers and be able to communicate, etc. I now think that actually having done various types of remote and having done freelance and all sorts of things, and work with companies that aren't on my doorstep, and or even companies that are on my doorstep but I'm not in their office, I think that actually a lot of these communication tools can be abused to create the sort of semblance of communication. You know, just because a lot of text is going back and forth doesn't mean that, you know, we're communicating or that we feel connected to people.
That's true.
And I definitely feel like, you know, I get a lot more from a call with, you know, my CEO, Andy, you know, a 10-minute, 15-minute call with him, is far more productive for me and far more, it makes me feel far more like I'm in the loop and that I know what's going on and that the, you know, and that what I'm doing and meeting the objectives of the company and all those kind of things, than if I, you know, sat all day on Skype chat with him or if I sat all day on email with him. I think there's something about verbal communication that's really important. And actually, there comes a point where I think to myself, right, I really need some FaceTime with these people now. You know, I think we tend to find ourselves putting off important discussions until we're face to face. So there tends to be, you know, if we want to have a major product discussion, there tends to be a sort of like, well, when can you get up to Glasgow next? And that is perfectly, you know, reasonable from my point of view, because I think that when we do sit down in the office, we get a lot more, we achieve a lot more.
Do you have set days or set times of the year when you go up, or is it, I know some people who work remotely will, you know, go for a week every quarter, something like that, or do you just, No,
once, well, I mean, I've only ever been up for 3 days, I think is the longest I've spent up there. And I think that, since I started, I've probably gone up on average every couple of months.
Right.
Yeah. But obviously my commute, as it were, to, I mean, you know, some people do things like, you know, Bristol to Edinburgh every day, which seems crazy, doesn't it? But, you know, people do it, or people, you know, just pop up for a meeting and pop down. You see people who don't even have coats with them sometimes, you know, or have just got their briefcase in their hand or whatever, and they're clearly going for a meeting and coming straight back. And I always fly, so it's like 50 minutes. So really, it's not a big commitment. Whereas obviously you've got a much, you know, or if someone works in San Francisco, for example, you know, I know people who work for San Francisco-based companies, that's a massive commitment. They have to sort of formalise it a bit more, I suspect.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, we've got mutual friends who kind of fly out every quarter for a week. And, you know, dealing with jet lag on the East Coast is relatively okay. It does kind of flip your day upside down, the West Coast, just simply because they're a whole day behind. So literally when you're kind of clocking off here, they're just starting out with the 8 hours from, GMT to PST. So yeah, that one, I think that one, maybe you need that FaceTime because you are literally back to front, you know, unless you're, no, I didn't mean, no pun intended, but you know, as soon as you're sort of ramping down for the day, they're sort of ramping up for the day. And I know a lot of people who work with West Coast based companies are expected to kind of not obviously be around for the whole day, but certainly have some crossover. So they end up working sort of late, starting late and finishing late. And obviously, if you've got family and stuff, that's going to have quite an impact. If you're having to sort of...
Yeah, I know quite a few people who are actually based in Australia and New Zealand that I worked with while I was consulting and stuff. And actually, we're working with now the web developers who are in Australia. And it's, you know, they're sitting there. We're there at 9 in the morning doing a meeting with them. And we're like, morning, and it's like 9 o'clock or 8:30, you know, 8 o'clock their time, you know. And that's, you know, and I said to those guys, you know, have a good evening. And 9 times out of 10, they say to me, oh, yeah, I've got 3 meetings still.
Yeah, maybe that's, do you think that's the price to pay for the privilege of working out of Australia for, you know, in tech roles? I don't know.
Well, I think what ends up happening is, particularly because Australia is quite a sort of, you know, sporty outdoor culture, people tend to do stuff like, you know, spend their morning doing whatever recreation they want to do. These are the people that tend to work with UK-based companies that I know anyway. So they tend to then they do that, maybe spend time with their family in the morning, and then, work into the evening. Sometimes late into the evening, you know, I used to do calls with people.
Yeah, midnight, for sure, their time. For sure. I mean, let's go back because we've both worked in traditional offices. I've worked in sort of small sort of 6-person offices right through to sort of open plan offices where, you know, this sort of 3 floors of open plan desks and, you know, each floor's got 100 people on it. What did you personally like or dislike about that? What did you think you got from that office environment, maybe in particular sort of open plan, which seems to be more common now than not?
I can't say that I was, you know, over enamored with open plan working. I've done the same as you. I've worked in a couple of companies where it's sort of, you know, 100 people to a floor and either cubicles or just, you know, rows and rows of desks. And I find that, you know, people instinctively try and sort of build walls.
Yeah.
Instinctively, you know, so it's a classic joke from The Office, isn't it? The building wall between you and the person opposite you. But, you know, I think that is kind of, you know, kind of my experience of open plan living. I think it is a situation where there's only a certain amount of hustle and bustle and noise and activity and stuff you can do. And I think that often, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but the idea that people, different types of people like different types of environments. And I've worked in offices where, you know, the operations team, like highly technical people who are doing, very detail-oriented work, are on the floor with salespeople. And there's nothing disparaging about salespeople, but they're quite noisy often. They're always on the phone. There's often a lot of clapping and whooping when people get deals. And, you know, those two types of individuals don't necessarily mix well. So I think, you know, while I've always enjoyed it and I've enjoyed the sort of, you know, the banter and the bustle of having lots of people around me, I do see that there's kind of like destructive, you know, behaviors that come out of.
Yeah, I think I echo that entirely. I think in the one example, I spent a year on a sort of open plan floor, and what amazed me was just how little work people did. I mean, there was a stay late culture anyway. And I'm not necessarily measuring. I mean, we'll talk about how much real work you can get done in a day, and whether working remotely, you kind of put a pressure on yourself to do more because you're not kind of being watched as such. But there's a lot of people that are kind of wandering around, a lot of coffee making. I mean, I used to take part in that, I'm sure. But coupled with a stay late culture that was kind of inherent in this particular department, you couldn't help but think if people actually stopped the sort of 3 hours of wandering about, they would be able to leave sort of at 6 o'clock as opposed to 9 o'clock, and that kind of thing. It was
I think it is what is fascinating about open plan is that, you know, your working practices are what you think is normal, obviously. So it's all subjective, but you know, I would be in at sort of 8:45, 8:30 or something, and the place would be deserted. And, you know, the place, it would slowly fill up, and there were still people coming in at sort of 9:30 sometimes or whatever. And I always thought to myself, you know, maybe that's commuting, maybe that, you know, whatever. But then those same people would often be staying late into the evening. And, you know, I don't think that, and I think that they felt pressure to do that, because do you want to be the person that stands up and walks out when everybody else is sitting there working? You know, it's not, and maybe, you know, there's multiple departments on a floor. You don't know those people that well. You know, you don't want to be the one with the reputation as a job's worth, you know? So I think there's a lot more pressure on people, in those situations. To sort of conform to whatever the norm is. And it's that sort of who's going to blink first type situation of who's going to get up and go home.
I've been in that situation a couple of times in a couple of different roles, and it's you're just literally sat there finished for the day waiting for someone to get up and go, so you're not the first. And when you analyze it, it's kind of silly really, because surely it's not a measure of productivity, is it, how long you actually stay in the building? But I think it's one of the habits.
But I think that ironically that a lot of people actually do think that. I think that, you know, people if people show up late and go home early, the general, even though that's not a good measure of productivity, you know, the person could have been extremely productive between those hours, and have got their work done, and, you know, be making the company money or whatever the goal of their role is. But people generally go, oh, there's Billy knocking off early again.
It was always Billy. Always Billy. No, it's true. I think it's a common problem, but I guess it's, again, because we've both worked in tech roles and we've both worked in sort of coding roles as well. Productivity is an interesting one when it comes to things like that. And I mean, whether you work remotely or not, I mean, coding in a noisy environment, I've never, like, people tapping you on the shoulder, asking you to do things, asking you about this feature, that feature. I've always found that I would really inhibit my ability to actually, you know, not that the stuff I did was particularly great anyway, but even remotely getting close would be really difficult how, I mean, you worked in a sort of coding environment. Did all the devs sit together? Was there a lot of banter? How important was that banter? And how did you guys sort of say, do you know what, I really need to finish this thing. I need some kind of, was it headphones on type thing, or what was it?
Yeah, so I think that each little development team always develops their own sort of code for interrupt me or don't interrupt me. And, you know, there's lots of different words for it. You know, people say I'm plugging in or I'm going in the zone or whatever the word is, but they often, you know, it often involves putting headphones on. And I've worked in offices, not for long, mind you, for this very reason, where headphones were banned and there was music playing in the room, and you could request different types of music and things, but you couldn't wear headphones. I think it was about antisocial behavior. You know, they thought it was antisocial or it hampered productivity or it hampered communication or something. I'm not quite sure what the thinking was behind it. But it was just a blanket rule that I was told when I first got there, you know, no headphones, please. And I think it's an incredibly stupid role. And I think I lasted, you know, all of a couple of months. I mean, it was a contract position anyway, but, I didn't, you know, rush to renew that contract. And I think that, you know, every time that I've worked in a team, the code has been, I'm putting my headphones on and I'm sort of going in the zone now. And the minute that person takes their headphones off, it's fine to, you know, have a bit of banter and chuck something at them and that kind of thing. But I think going back to banter, I think, and I know it's a terrible buzzword or whatever, but I think, it is quite important, because some of these jobs can be quite soul destroying. You know, a lot of people might disagree with this, but I think that a lot, it's funny, having worked in a corporate environment, I saw development very much as like a sort of a production line process. I didn't see myself particularly as originally when I first started working in big companies, I didn't see myself particularly as an architect. You know, someone else did that, or the team did it together. You know, they architected how the app would work or how the site would work or whatever. And then I had my role of building X or building Y. And I think that that's something that's not really that well understood by people who've always freelanced or people who are part of, you know, what I call web culture, you know, people who go to conferences and, you know, absorb all the latest stuff and everything. But there is a huge amount of people out there who work in corporate environments who aren't on the bleeding edge and who don't, you know, hang on every, you know, technical guru's words and are having to deal with IE6 still, because that's what, or maybe not IE6 these days, but IE8 still or whatever, because that's what the company uses. And these are two very different worlds. It's almost like completely different jobs almost to me. You know, everyone is very concerned with standards and everything in the web community, but you know, some of the companies that I've worked for wouldn't even know what standards were, like what web standards are. They just don't know what that term is, even now. And I think it's sort of, it's funny, I always think that, you know, almost my memory of those type of companies was a very sort of almost like being part of a production line. You know, I was just building something, whereas, you know, the smaller companies with the sort of more forward thinking offices and or remote working or whatever was where people started actually being able to you met people who cared about the work they did. Does that ring true for you at all?
I think so. I think, yes, it's definitely freelancing or working on sort of discrete projects compared to sort of being in a place where is more of a production environment, you know, production line environment is make how you approach things quite different. I absolutely agree. But yeah, I think the banter is important. And I think, when you work remotely or freelance on your own, maybe working out of your, as I say, your man shed or your back bedroom or a co-working space. I think one thing you do notice is that lack of sort of human interaction. And so I think you kind of try and compensate for that with doing things like having a routine that makes you feel like you are going to work. I mean, we both do this. We both if I'm not traveling for work, I'll have sort of set days where I will sort of walk a couple of miles into town, sit in the same seat in a coffee shop for a couple of hours, come home, just to give me that kind of feeling that I'm actually going out to work.
What do you think that provides you with? Like, you know, you sit in the same seat, you know, do you talk to people to you around you?
No.
And right. You see, I found that when I lived in a bigger place.
It's like huge, Bath, the big city, the big smoke.
If you know what I mean. When you're in a bigger place, a more anonymous place, you might have the staff start recognizing you because you come in every day and they'll say morning to you. They won't know your name or anything, but they'll say morning to you and they'll, you know what drink you have, for example. But I now, where I live, I have people who also frequent the coffee shop every day and will talk to me. Not necessarily people who are tech people or who sit on laptops all day, you know, one guy who just sits and reads a book all the time. But I wonder what this provides us with. I mean, does it, you know, is it just that sort of familiarity? Is that all we're looking for?
Well, I think we've both grown up in an age where you went out to work. Certainly me, maybe less so for you. I think, you know, there was this notion that you got up and you had this distinct separation between home and work. I think that's got, the older I've got, that's got a lot more blurry, especially when you work on your own projects or, you know, you're freelancing or a small company that you've maybe set up or working with friends on something, that kind of thing. Those mental barriers become very blurred. And I also suffer terribly from you know, what I... most people, you know, term cabin fever. I can't be in the house, you know, for long periods of time. I just need to get out. I need to walk. No. I need to do something. I just need to be around other people, even if I know them or not. And I think one of the things that's quite interesting is when you don't, you know, often you'll have what, you know, jokingly refer, you know, co-work days. Occasionally we'll get together and it, like around, you know, a big table in the coffee shop or something. But because we don't, the startup table, because startup we don't table. Do it as a matter of course, as a set routine, it kind of like becomes more of a catch-up as opposed to we're co-working. And so you then, it's like you almost have to write the day off, which is counterproductive in many ways, because you get it the next day going, oh my god, I've got so much to do because I didn't get what I wanted to get done yesterday done.
It has to be regular. I think if you're going to co-work with people, it has to be regular so that you're not saying how's the kids and you know how's this
but
going?
I think a good mix helps for me. Like we have done a podcast from the coffee shop, but it's not ideal. You know, I do need to be in my little micro studio to do that. I find sometimes writing, strangely, I do much better in a coffee shop. You know, I can tap away. They've got the sort of, you know, the greatest driving hits of Top Gear of the 80s on the stereo or something. You know.
You see, I have to block that out. I can't possibly listen to their rubbish music. It just drives me insane.
But yeah, I think that sort of feeling of actually... plus, I take my daughter to school... walk her up and drop her off. So it's that kind of marker. You have to get out for a certain time. And then it's an obvious choice to sort of think, well, I'll walk into... Yeah, and then come back for lunch type thing and then sort of work in the office in the afternoon. But...
You see, I found I can't physically work. I can't actually do work if I haven't been out. So I think it was obviously a mental barrier because obviously I could do work. But, you know, I have colleagues and I have friends who... we'll literally get up in the morning and, you know, have some breakfast and then walk the long commute down the landing to their spare room, sit down and just start work. And I couldn't even contemplate that. I've never understood why that is. I can, you know, go out for a coffee, work until even, you know, 10 o'clock even, and come back and I'll feel fine. I'll be able to work when I'm back. But it's not, I was going to say, it's not caffeine addiction because I couldn't have a coffee in the house, you know, but it's something about, the act of going to another place.
No, I agree. I think there's something, vitally important about sort of having that marker, whether it be, you know, going out just to grab a coffee and coming back 10 minutes later, and sort of that act of opening the door and coming in, sitting down, sort of like I'm starting my day. Or, you know, and I've never been one, you know, people talk about sort of coding in their pajamas and isn't that great? I just could never do that. It's just like, yeah, I have to get dressed. I have to sort of feel like I'm starting the day. A lot of those things that people... talk about, you know, the joys of remote working, literally sitting in your PJs on the sofa with your laptop. Yes, I'm sure we've done it occasionally, but as a rule, never. It's more...
What do you feel about the space and everything that you're in at home? Because, you know, I've changed quite a lot, my thinking on this, and to the point where we've basically got rid of a desk. And, you know, my colleague Douglas is appalled at the idea of this, and he's sort of shocked that I, you know, what do you mean you don't have a large screen, what do you mean you don't have an Aeron chair, and, you know, an ergonomic setup, but I just don't. And the reason I don't is because I wasn't using it, and I tend to work from either the kitchen table or work from an armchair. Nice. That I have. which might sound like I'm not productive, but I am, you know, I'm still producing stuff, but I tend not to work from where most people would work from. And I'm effectively working from my living room, which again seems to be, you know, unusual for people who work at home. I do find that I find it hard to separate work and home as a result, though. You know, I think sometimes the sort of the office in the spare room, or you know, having a dedicated study or whatever, works well because you can shut it away.
I mean, I do both, if I'm honest. I I'm quite happy for things like email and writing to use the laptop. But when it comes to maybe doing a bit of coding or screencasting or recording this, I like to be in the sort of what I jokingly refer to as my new micro studio. It's literally a small desk with my monitor on it. I do find that sometimes I can get more done on a big screen. I know that sounds silly because technically,
probably no, I agree.
The screen on my laptop probably has more pixels than the display, but it just feels like it's a little bit easier to work with, that kind of thing. But it's been so long since I've actually gone and sat at a desk sort of from 9 to 5 that I think I kind of like the different environments, and depending on the mood, depends on which one. There's been times where I've literally worked from my desk for weeks on end, and then suddenly thought, I could actually sit downstairs. No one's in, it's not going to get in anyone's way.
I was going to ask you, actually, first of all, is the house yours during the day, as it were? Because I know that that's another thing that people struggle with, is that, I have friends who's maybe their partner's home all the time, or they have children, and so they have to find some way of getting away from it, as it were. Not in a negative way, just in a sort of like, you can't work if you're being, asked to help with the kids, or you're distracted by talking to your partner all the time. I do know people who are a couple and sit in the same room and work at home. So I don't know. I find that, if Katie, my wife, is home, I am less productive. Not that it's a distraction as such, but it's just that tendency to have discussions about home stuff as opposed to just focusing on
I'm in
work.
A pretty good situation there. Often at the moment, one child's at school, one isn't, but for 3 days a week, the house is empty. Because one's at sort of preschool,
right?
On those other days, I'll tend to split them up and either head into town for the morning, like I said, or but they're pretty good. I can shut the door and really don't get disturbed, so I'm quite lucky like that. I can kind of separate, even to the point of even if we're in the same house, we'll end up having lunch at different times just because we're both mentally in a position of like, well, you're doing your thing, I'm doing my thing. Occasionally the children will hop in and join a Skype call, which is often entertaining, occasionally frustrating, but it's difficult. And I do think, as I said at the beginning of the show, that it's a privilege to be able to do work for great companies and not be expected to be in the office and things like that. But I don't think it's without its problems, but on the whole, I do think it's, it's increasingly happening, and more people are, reaping the benefits. I think even if you run a company now where you have an office culture, having the ability to be able to say have a day from home, or you hear a lot of people say, I just need a day working from home to get things done, which seems kind of ironic, but I think it's increasingly the case. But I know from talking to a lot of people, it's frowned upon because it's seen as somehow that you're kind of skiving off your duties and that kind of stuff. But I get... No, go on.
Well, I think go on. I was going to say one final thought I was having about, right back to the beginning when we discussed how much the company has bought into remote working. I was going to ask, how important you think that is, because, I consider myself very lucky that I work in the same time zone as my company, and, I have colleagues all over the place. Like, there's colleagues who are up in Scotland but who don't work from the office. And indeed, I think the CEO and CEO only work in the office a handful of days of the week. And I think there is a culture around make your own schedule, flexible working, as long as the work gets done. Within reason, obviously, sometimes they say there's, a meeting at this time and... please be there. You structure your day accordingly. But they've really bought into remote working, mainly because that's all they can do, because we're spread out all over the place. People in Tel Aviv, people in England, there were people in America. But I do know people, and you know them as well, who have had remote working jobs, and it's not worked out because I feel that the company they were working for hadn't bought into remote working in the way that they needed to. They felt that, you know, they were saying things like, we'll put a work phone line into your house and we'll, you know, if you can always be on Skype at 9 a.m. in the morning and just check in with me. Almost like, as we said before about, you know, making sure you work those nine, you know, there's 8.5 hours a day or whatever it is, you know. And I think that is where remote working really falls down, and sometimes where it gets a little bit of a bad reputation. You know, I've chatted with people and they've been like, oh yeah, I tried remote for this company and it just didn't work. And, you know, I think it's better to be in the office and I'm happier in the office. But I think when you actually dig deeper into why that is, it's because the company hasn't actually embraced
it. I agree. I think you have to have the feeling, obviously you never really know until you try, that, They are buying into it, and they're not going to be kind of watching you over your shoulder. And as I said earlier, I do think that you often try that a little bit harder, maybe because you do feel that you have to perform that a little bit more and be a little bit more visible, and maybe, you know, produce that a little bit more. And so sometimes, as I said to you this morning on the phone, it's like you can beat yourself up if you don't feel like you're producing enough, even though actually what you're doing is plenty and potentially more than if you as an individual sat in the office.
Yeah, and I find myself making, because product development's what I do, I find myself making little screencasts of the current progress on product X or Y and just sending them to, you know, the founders. And, you know, they always seem appreciative of that, but, like, I do see that as kind of, it's almost justification of my existence. You know, look, this stuff's progressing, isn't it cool? And I wonder if they feel they need that or they don't need that. But, you know, I think that's something that quite a lot of remote people and even freelance people feel they need to be. They need to be demonstrating what they're doing.
I agree. I think there's, but again, I think, you know, as your relationship with the company changes, that probably changes too. And, you know, once you've seen your output kind of grow, and over time, people will appreciate that you're actually, you know, diligent and stuff like that. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, but I think it's more in the remote worker's head than it is actually, you know, concern from
No, I'd agree with that company. For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think we'll see a lot more people working remotely over time, and I think you know, there are job boards specifically set up now, the 37 Signals run one, just about remote work and remote gigs and things like that. And they even wrote the book on it, so you can, called Remote, which, was interesting. I mean, they're big advocates of it. I think they've got a post out on their blog at the moment, which literally goes through showing all the different desks of their employees. And I think I've seen two which happen to be in their beautiful office in Chicago. So it's quite interesting that as a company, one of the big things they talk about is actually getting together, as you say, with the FaceTime kind of, every sort of quarter, every 6 months, the whole company gets together. And I think, you know, that has myriad benefits. So FaceTime is still very important. But if you guys out there have got any thoughts or, you know, experiences,
we'd love to hear about them.
You can always...
particularly remote working as opposed to freelancing.
Yes, I agree.
I think they are distinct.
Any thoughts on that? Any tools that we should check out? Any kind of sites where people share experiences, it'd be great to hear about them. So yeah, do.
Or any sort of, because this is another thing we haven't talked about, but that is interesting, is, you know, any sort of experiences sharing offices, or, you know, what's it like being a remote worker in an office full of freelancers, those kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything like
about.
That be gratefully received. But we have kind of gone a little bit long, but I thought as we were talking about on the phone this morning, it's good to get some of those ideas down on the podcast as well.
Is grasp the nettle.
Yes.
Seize the day.
Yeah.
Carpe diem.
That's probably a bit weighty. For our...
our meanderings
life
about...
in the West Country, But as always, thanks for listening. And don't forget to enter our competition. Go for it.
Shall I repeat the questions? Right, so where are we? So the first question was, what was Matthew Lillard's handle in the cult classic 1995 film Hackers? Second question is, in the same year, Sandra Bullock played a systems analyst in the film The Net. During the course of the film, her identity is changed by cyber criminals, but what is the name they gave her?
And to enter, please just answers to at Back to Front Show on Twitter. And yeah,
hashtag, and you can hashtag it whatever you want.
I don't mind, but not rude. It's a clean.
Yeah.
It's a clean show.
Yeah, it's a clean podcast.
It does say clean all over iTunes. Unlike others, I could mention.
It does.
Child friendly, everything yes. friendly. It's all good. But no, none.
No innuendo.
We'll be back unless I have another mild brainwave with our first episode of 12 Ideas #12 Ideas, I should say, just to keep up with the children there. Next week, all being well. And as always, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon. Cheers.